Conversation sharp, pointed, and insightful. This is Stacy on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
The Ninth Circuit is the last bastion. Well, the Fourth Circuit and the D.C. Circuit are out to lunch, too, but the Ninth Circuit is the one that needs saving the most. Why in the world do we owe anything to Dianne Feinstein? She tried to take out Kavanaugh illegitimately.
There is no Russian collusion. I had no collaboration with WikiLeaks. I'm not charged with conspiracy. Believe me, if they could have made that case, they would have. They're trying to criminalize legitimate political inquiry. They're trying to criminalize free speech, which is really what's this about. This is about.
Correct me if I'm wrong. To reiterate, you support the Medicare for All bill. I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance. So for people out there who like their insurance, they don't get to keep it.
Well, listen, the idea is that everyone gets access to medical care. Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on.
And now, Stacy Washington.
Every time I hear Kamala Harris say, let's eliminate all of that, let's move on, and I think about me and my son and my husband jumping up and down for joy and rejoicing this morning at a treatment plan that is now working for him that we're 5 weeks into. And I think about how that was made possible by amazing doctors, a Catholic hospital, a home nursing facility, mail order pharmacy, all of the parts, the moving parts of our health insurance system here in this country came together with synergy, not without some snafus, I might add. That, you know, of course, you know me, Tiger Mom extraordinaire, making the phone calls, wondering why things aren't happening according to schedule. But beyond any tiny hiccups, our private insurance that we are able to get through my husband's work, and it's a national corporation that you've heard of before, has come through for us as a family with my son's treatment program, as it has for millions of other families that are facing negative diagnoses. And so to hear Kamala Harris, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm right out the gate. I haven't even told you who was on the show today, but I'm fired up about this because it's real. It's real when you're on the phone with your insurance company. And they say, yeah, we're giving you a pre-authorization for this medication, but the cost is $20,000 per treatment, and you'll need one every 4 to 6 weeks. That's real. And so I want Kamala Harris, you know, she's actually just on her first marriage, and they haven't even been married 10 years. I'm her marriage great-grandmother. You know, I'm younger than she is, but I've been married far longer. She's never had any children. And if you've never had any children, no offense, there is no condemnation or judgment. But what can she tell me about how to take care of my son? And so I invite Kamala Harris not just to justify her crazy, whacked out, really unthoughtful remarks, but she should come onto the program and talk to me, a mom of three, about how all of the children have had some interaction with the healthcare industry through our insurance program. And I'm not just talking about well visits. And by the grace of God, we've always been able to get done what needed to be done because health insurance has been there. We've paid for it the whole time. We have a high deductible. We've done all the things. And in response, it has done what it is supposed to do. They can't guarantee you a treatment outcome, but a health insurance plan that you get to deal with the insurance company. I can call them myself. I don't call a government bureaucrat and ask for permission to talk to the health insurance. I just call the insurance myself. They have a line for members. They have a line for the employer, and they have a separate line for my physician or my son's physician or any treatment provider. I want Kamala Harris, in addition to explaining how she knows better for my son than I do, I'd love for her to explain how her plan of Medicare for All works better for my kids and my husband and me, as opposed to what we have now, and why we should be forced under threat of law, just because she would be the president, to try her thing out without her ever having proven to us that it works. This is the problem that I have with these liberals. Before I get into it, I want to make sure that I tell you who's on the program today. We actually have Tommy Schultz, National Communications Director for the American Federation of Children. This is School Choice Week. We've been talking about a little bit here on the show. We're very excited about it because for the first time, some families are now just discovering that there are other educational options out there for them that will give their kids a better shot at a great education, preparing them to enter the, not just the workforce, but the life, your responsibility as a citizen to be able to participate in our country and everything that goes on here. You need to be able to read and write and think analytically, and You need to have some ability to learn so that you can get into whatever field you want to get into. College isn't the only option. And so he's going to come on and talk about school choice for, you know, for me, but not for thee. And we're also going to get into some interesting discussion by Representative Catherine Clark. She's a Democrat, and she's on the she's one of the appropriators who's on the special committee to negotiate for no wall for Donald Trump, but everything else they want, which is a bunch of malarkey. And she talked about how one of the government employees under Obama was telling her about this whole, you know, the cartel blew a hole in a steel slot wall and drove trucks through it, trucks of drugs and people that they were smuggling into our country. And but she's still against, you know, the wall. She can't give any support to the wall. And we're going to also talk about Howard Schultz. He is best known to you because of Starbucks. We've all drank it. We've all tried it. You know, we've all eaten up a slice of pumpkin loaf or a slice of lemon loaf, and we've enjoyed it. I mean, let's face it. They make good products, or else we wouldn't all have tried it at least once, and some of us many, many times. And he's a billionaire. And so liberals have always loved him because he was the one who said, you know, I don't care what your views are on marriage. You can't even say anything like that in one of my stores. I don't care what your views are on the Second Amendment. You can't bring your lawfully owned firearms into my stores. And he's really been a very secure and safe place for liberals to trust that he'll be emanating these kinds of statements out, you know, out of the ether. And now that he wants to run as an independent, he says, you know, he's doing it because there are so many people who are sick of both sides of the political aisle and don't see any real movement, don't see any accomplishments happening. But then the liberals themselves, they're like, how dare you? You know how they are. If you're with them, you're with them, but you have to do as you're told. But if you decide you're going to like pop up and try some stuff without, you know, getting their okay, they said, to be specific, he can run as a Democrat. We welcome him to get in and be a part of our process and then let the chips fall where they may. In other words, if you can win the nomination as a Democrat, then we love you. But if you're going to be an independent, well, beans on you. And full disclosure, I feel the same way about any Republican who said they would run as an independent. Those just siphon votes off of the primary vote getter, the nominee, and it ensures the other side will win. But I find their comments on this, there's a mashup from the Free Beacon, and we're going to get into that a little bit. It's just comical. They're literally losing their marshmallows over this. And I'm enjoying it. I don't have popcorn ready, but I'm not going to lie. I had a glass of vegetable juice and I was enjoying it while listening to that audio. So I went into the Daily Confession and it dovetails into this story about a hero customer who killed an armed robber at the Georgia Family Dollar. So let's listen to that audio first.
Some extremely tense moments here at the Family Dollar on Covington Highway when a customer intervenes and actually shoots and kills a robber. It happened here this morning on Covington Highway. Now, DeKalb police say a man with a gun was robbing the store, had that gun pointed at the cashier. Now, when a customer heard what was happening and saw the commotion, he immediately pulled out his own weapon and defended the clerk by opening fire. You might be able to see the clerk is still on the scene here, very shaken up, wearing black with a hoodie. DeKalb police are still on the scene here as they are trying to investigate exactly what happened. We are told there is a videotape of this deadly shooting.
He appeared to be shopping when he heard the confrontation at the cash register. He intervened and stopped the robbery.
Now, DeKalb police tell us that customer will not be charged. He is down at police headquarters giving a statement right now.
That's a good news story. That's a good guy with a gun. That's defensive gun use as defined by the CDC in their study that showed that over 2 million times a year, Americans use guns to defend themselves from attackers, themselves or others. But you might be wondering, well, Stacey, how are you going to connect this to the Bible? Oh, I'm going to connect it to the Bible and appropriately. I'm not just picking and choosing and cherry picking. This is what God has said about our requirement. It is actually a requirement for us as Christians to defend ourselves and others. So first of all, God talks about, you know, in the Bible, that what happens if someone is caught in the act of stealing? In Exodus 22, verses 2 and 3, it says, if a thief is caught in the act of breaking into a house and is struck and killed in the process, the person who killed the thief is not guilty of murder. But if it happens in daylight, the one who killed the thief is guilty of murder. So in other words, you can't just kill someone for being inside your house, but you can defend yourself. If you don't know what they're doing there and they're not fleeing, then you, and this is part of what the castle doctrine is based upon. Luke 11:21 says, when a strong man fully armed guards his own mansion, his property is saved. Notice it says, when a strong man fully armed. It doesn't say a strong man full of 911 or with a cell phone ready. Isaiah 49:25 says, who can snatch the plunder of war from the hands of a warrior? Who can demand that a tyrant lets his captive go? Well, a man with a gun can. Everybody else just has to sit by and wait for the tyrant to make a better choice. The Bible talks about not taking revenge. You can't have an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. You resist not, you know, I don't want you to take this the wrong way. We're supposed to turn the other cheek, but when it comes to defending ourselves, that's a wholly nother matter. Recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. So you're not taking revenge on someone. You're not chasing them out and shooting them in the street. That's not what happened in this instance. He shot someone who was holding someone up under threat of a gun, and he didn't know what the person was going to do, and he fell within the parameters of the law, and that is why the police have already announced, before they've even completed the investigation, after viewing the footage, that he is not going to be charged. But God also says, Psalm 144:1, praise the Lord who is my rock. He trains my hands for war and gives my fingers skill for battle. Psalm 18:34, he trains my hands for battle. He strengthens my arm to draw a bronze bow. We have to be discerning. Let us discern for ourselves what is right. Let us learn together what is good. That's Job 34:4. Psalm 119:125 says, I am your servant. Give me discernment that I may understand your statutes. So this, to me, speaks to not just buying a gun and then that's it, but getting trained, getting properly educated on the use of a firearm, the safe transport of a firearm, everything that has to do with it. Because if you're going to use one, if you're going to be certified to carry one concealed, you need to be aware of how it works, how to safely store it, and how to use it, what the laws in your state say. Now, the Bible gives us a mandate to protect ourselves and our families. Psalm 82:4 says, rescue weak and needy people, help them escape the power of wicked people. This psalm exactly describes what the man in the video did. He saw someone in distress whose life was about to be forfeit, and he came in and rescued her. He did it because he was armed and could do it because he was there and on the scene, and it was his duty to do so, according to the Bible. Proverbs 24:11 says, rescue captives condemned to death and spare those staggering toward their slaughter. This is, you know, helping someone who's thinking about jumping off a bridge. You try to talk them down, you grab them, pull them on the other side, get them to safety. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So if you don't provide a way to protect and provide for your own family members, you're worse than an unbeliever. So we are tasked with obeying the law and protecting others. And that is what that good guy with the gun story just illustrated for us. If you don't have a firearm, you still have to try to rescue someone if it is within your means and power to do so. And that's biblical. And I like it because it goes right back into the Judeo-Christian founding of this country and how our founders, they were old white guys. Apparently, they were members of the patriarchy. Apparently, they were cisgendered. But while they were doing all that stuff, they also consulted the Bible and all of the old wise documents to come up with a constitution and a bill of rights that protect our innate and inherent value given to us by God. That's something we should all be proud of and participate in and happily, happily teach others about, because it's the truth. We have a duty to defend other people when we see they need rescuing, and we have every right to do so, given to us by God, protected by the Second Amendment, enshrined in our Constitution. We're Americans, not Americans, right? All right, when we get back, we're going to have Tommy Schultz, National Communications Director for the American Federation for Children, right here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
Hi, I'm Crawford Loritz with a Legacy Moment. Here's a habit I've cultivated through the years. About once a month, I try to go away to a special place where I spend the entire day with the Lord. Often I come to those days burdened and needing direction. But as I start my prayer time, I don't always lead with my need for direction. Typically, I begin the day with praise and prayer, just a time of worship. I lift my heart to heaven. More often than not, I leave that place with a sense of God's clear direction concerning the need. As we move toward the heart of God in worship and praise, God moves towards us and discloses His heart concerning the issues and the needs in our own lives. We cannot presume to know God's will if we're not cultivating an intimate relationship with Him. Let's look at Acts chapter 13, verses 2 and 3. This is the church at Antioch. Listen to how God responds to their worship. While they were worshiping the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, "Set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I have called them." Then after fasting and praying, they laid their hands on them and sent them off. Notice that the sense of direction came as a result of their fasting and praying. While they were worshiping the Lord, He was moving toward them to give them direction, issuing the call to send out two precious leaders to expand His cause and accomplish His purposes. Here's what I want you to remember today. If you're faced with a dilemma, a decision, or a need for direction, don't look first at the challenge, but lift your heart toward heaven. God will disclose Himself to you because you've moved toward Him. And in the process, He'll make clear what you need to do.
More information about the ministry of Crawford Loritz can be found online at livingalegacy.org. Join Crawford tomorrow for another Legacy Moment.
You can download episodes of Stacy of the Right from the podcast page on AFR.net or UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Now, back to the show on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Thank you so much for being here today. It is a pleasure to have you live and direct listen to the show. And also, thank you so much for making your home here at American Family Radio. We are so glad to have you with us. Right now, I would love to introduce our guest this hour. It's National Communications Director for the American Federation of Children, Tommy Schultz. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about this. It's National School Choice Week, and for many, many millions of Americans who are already taking advantage of school choice, be it charter schools or homeschooling or independent schools or forming independent associations and doing co-ops and things like that, they're already in the thick of it and they're enjoying the newfound freedom that they have for their kids. But for millions of other parents, they live in areas where they're kind of shackled to the local school district. And they're not even aware that they have these options. What is it that National School Choice Week is really trying to do for parents this week?
Sure. So National School Choice Week is primarily, the goal is basically to get parents aware of the options and to celebrate those options. And to your point, you know, too many Americans simply just don't have that option available to them. You know, about 85% of students go to their zone public school. And frankly, we just did a poll 2 weeks ago that we released. It's the 2019 National School Choice Poll, and it showed that 59% of parents would actually prefer to send their kid to a different school. 29% said a religious school, 18% said a private non-religious school, 11% said a charter school. So the demand is there, and we just think that, frankly, all families should have the freedom to choose the best education for their child, whether that is at the local public school or it's at a charter school or a private school. And we just think that it's fundamentally unjust that only those with the financial means to do so, whether that's either through buying a new home or paying for private school tuition, or generally just they were lucky enough to be born into the right zip code, only those folks can fit into the best school for them. And we just think that should be available to everybody.
Okay, so I totally agree with you. I've been a proponent of school choice for really a long time here in the state of Missouri, and I've testified before the Missouri legislature in support of school choice initiatives. But it really gets gummed up at the kind of local level when state legislatures try to enact a little bit of school choice. Usually it's the school choice people will say, look at all these options. We should have access to all of these. And then the legislators are like, oh, those look interesting. And then before it gets out of committee, the National Education Association has sent their people in and strong-armed the legislators from the rural areas into voting against it, even if they're Republicans and they're really strong on every other issue. How do people get around that in their local state legislatures? How do they get around that roadblock that's presented by the National Education Association?
Sure. You're right to point out that the major opponents to this are the teachers' unions, the National Education Association, the American Federation for Teachers. I mean, they shuffle around $300+ million each year, all coming out of the dues that they're forcing out of teachers or other school staff to pay for this, of course. They're shuffling this around for their political causes. And frankly, why is it that there is an entrenched special interest group that is trying to preserve the current system, right? It just doesn't make sense if you were to start with a blank canvas and redesign how we do our education system. It just doesn't make sense how it's currently working right now. You know, we have options in every other aspect of our life except education. And, you know, I like to say, especially for legislators and those who are kind of queasy about this issue initially, I like to just point out to, hey, where did you go to school? Where did you send your own children to school? We very often see that at a rate far higher than average American, that, you know, legislators send their kids to private school. And I even point out to, you know, some other friends across the aisle saying, look, where, what do Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden, what do they all have in common? They all went to K-12 private school. So clearly, choice is available unless you're poor. And I think for a legislator to wrap their head around this the first time when they're initially voting on it, it is a challenge because you have some of these institutional, well-funded political interests from the teachers' unions or the superintendents' association who are trying to make the case and to scare legislators about school choice and to scare them into something that it's not. And I would point to Florida as a really good example of where it initially started out with almost only Republican support and a couple of Democrats that supported the expansions under Governor Jeb Bush. But then a decade later, once families were actually enrolling into private schools and were loving the schools, and they had charter schools, all of a sudden you start to see a major bipartisan coalition show up. So for a legislator that's scared, I would point them to other states and other examples where when choice is implemented that all the schools are flourishing, whether they're public, private, or charter. And frankly, just pointing to the demand from parents. There's millions of kids on charter school wait lists right now, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands more, wanting to get into a private school if they have that option. So we think that that's the best way to convince a legislator and to show them the waiting list and the demand that's there. Otherwise, once they get implemented, the families start to become the advocates themselves.
Well, we saw down in Florida, Governor DeSantis was actually pushed over the line by black moms who received information from outside groups, not from the DeSantis campaign, talking about how he was for school choice, and if they wanted an opportunity to get their kids out of failing schools, they should vote him in so that he could enact legislation that would free them up from the trap that they were in. Meaning, you don't have to wait until you've achieved the American dream and you're solidly in the middle class and you can, you know, scrape together or borrow out of your 401k or do something, you know, really drastic to get into a private school to rescue your kids from a failing education model. You can do it through school choice wherever you live, because I think it's a misnomer, don't you, Tommy, that every family that lives in a poorer area actually hates their neighborhood? Sometimes people live in those neighborhoods and have close ties to them. They don't have enough money to afford private school, but they deserve better school options than what they have there. And so the idea that they could access school choice, it's really, it's so weird that Republicans don't run exclusively on that issue because it's a family issue. But I wonder how many others are going to look at what happened with Governor DeSantis and kind of pick finally get on the bandwagon. This is a great issue to run on.
Right. No, you're absolutely right to point to that election because it's very instructive. And let me back up to even describe further why this is so important for Republicans and all elected officials to pay attention to. So the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program is the largest private school choice program in the country for a single state. There are 100,000 students currently enrolled today in a private school thanks to this program, and all these kids are from low-income families. So the average family income for a family of four is $24,000. Those are the kids that are in this program. 70% of them are African-American and Hispanic. And so as you pointed out in this election, DeSantis, when he was running, made this kind of a critical issue, saying, look, I want to expand the choice program. And Andrew Gillum, my opponent, does not. And in fact, the day after his Democratic nomination, Gillum said that I want to bring these programs to a conclusion. So you're telling 100,000 kids and their moms, and as you probably saw in the Wall Street Journal article that said the school choice mom won the election for DeSantis, mm-hmm. when they become single-issue voters when they hear candidates talk like this, when they hear one say, I want to expand this, I want to give this to more kids because it's so successful, they're seeing tremendous learning gains in these schools of choice, and another candidate says, I want to end it, my goodness, they become single-issue voters. Our group, the Florida Federation for Children, and some other affiliates of ours were really working to educate voters about the candidate's stances there. And you start to see that when the exit polling came down to it, DeSantis won, I believe, by about 30-ish thousand votes. He won 18% of African-American mothers. Mm. I mean, I'll say that again. He won 18% of African-American moms. And so when you're looking at that and you're looking how that translates into roughly 100,000 votes from the African-American community, that could have very well won the election for him. So I hope all lawmakers at the state and local level start to look at this as, you know, frankly, a winning issue, because in our national poll that we did that I referenced, 67% of voters said they support school choice. 59% of voters said that they're more likely to support a politician who supports school choice. And you go down the GOP, Democrat, Independent, GOP, 80% support, Independent, 69% support. Even Democrats, 56% support school choice. They need to see this as a winning issue, and they have to throw away that fear of the teachers union coming in and trying to wreak havoc with their political dollars.
So a couple things. First of all, I find your excitement about this contagious, and I get really excited about it because I used to be on school board in our kids' local school district when they were in public school. And I want to play devil's advocate for a minute because we could just go on and on and on. I'm so in agreement with you, and I think I just will say this. There's nothing like, as a parent, watching your kids struggle in school and then they come home one day and they've got an A on their paper, or they've mastered a concept that I don't do math. I'm not good at math. If you hear your child say that and then they come home and they're doing math, you want to cartwheel down your neighborhood sidewalk. You want to tell every person, you want to take that paper with you everywhere you go and show it to people at the gas station. You just want people to know how you've had this breakthrough, because learning is the key to your child being successful in America. But I've heard so many times from people, really nice people that I like, who've said, you know, the thing is, I worked hard and I waited to have kids until we could afford to live in a school district that was good. And what you're saying is that people who live in this neighborhood or that neighborhood can come into my kid's school district and they're coming in and they're basically, they didn't have to work hard and make all the sacrifices that I made to be here. And how does that fare? And so I'm playing devil's advocate. I want to hear your answer to that, because it's a tough question, and I'm not discounting that. My husband and I did the same thing. We didn't start our family until we were in a neighborhood where we felt like, okay, now we're going to, you know, have the kids go to a school that they like or that we like. But there's millions of families who they already have the kids, and they're already on the path to their kid having a horrible non-education. So what do we say?
Yeah, to that specific point, and I appreciate that you can hear the excitement in my voice. I'm trying to tamper it down so I don't blow up speakers on your radio system. But, you know, I have seen and talked to directly dozens and dozens of crying mothers who talk about how their child at their previous school before they were able to actually access a private school or go to a charter school. Their kid was struggling. Their kid is being savagely bullied. They were just, the school wasn't the right fit for them. And, you know, all the levels of the spectrum of the school just wasn't right for them. And there's plenty of open seats across the country for every kid here, private, public, charter, you name it. In private schools alone, we've done the study that shows there's a million open seats right now in private schools that are just being unfilled. And frankly, could be filled tomorrow if school choice was widely available.
A million seats.
And to the families that say that, I made the right choices and I'm doing this for my kid, I think that's wonderful. And if for whatever reason they think someone else didn't make the right choices in their life, I would just say to them, why do they want to punish the next generation? Why do they want to punish that child who deserves to have a quality education, who deserves to have even just access to a quality education? Why should they have to sit in a school that has been languishing for decades, been underperforming students for decades, has basically become the pipeline to poverty or to prison or to worse? Why not give that kid the chance out? Why not let them go to the school of their choice? I think that's just kind of the fundamental heart of the issue here, is that every child does deserve this. Every family deserves that, the freedom to choose the best school for their child. That's in the heart of our mission statement. And whenever we talk to legislators or to families themselves, that's what motivates people, because they see that, you know what, this kind of system where we draw these arbitrary red lines around wherever your neighborhood is and say this is where you're destined to go to school and that's that. I mean, that just doesn't make sense.
Okay, so two things, and super quick, because I want to ask you one more question. So the second thing, the first thing is, I think we have to think of it from a different perspective. When someone says, well, I worked hard and I got into this neighborhood and et cetera, and that, you know, this family is kind of coming in and they're not having to make the same sacrifice. The sacrifice that we make as a society is every kid who can't read and do math in the third or fourth grade. The prison system looks and sees what percentage of the kids can't do it, and they start preparing beds for them by middle school because they know they're going to have their first interaction with the law in seventh, eighth, or ninth grade, and they're going to start down that path to being imprisoned, and that's a community they're going to be a part of. And so every kid we can rescue from that lowers crime and it improves our country. But I think the part that you mentioned about there being all those empty seats, it's hard for a school when the school is great and it's wonderful, but there are a lot of empty seats. It puts the parents in the position of paying tuition and then also needing to, donate, you know, so you get these big pamphlets and they're like, please donate, you know, please give to the giving campaign. And if you're already paying tuition, a lot of times you're like, I just can't give anymore, but you don't want the school to close. You know what I mean? So the solution is get some more kids in, and bringing kids in from other areas of the city means your kids are getting an experience there. Those kids are getting an experience. And the benefits, I think they unfold in a way that we can't calculate, Tommy. I think every time I think about this, I think about a couple that I know. They're both pharmacists. They're doctors of pharmacology. Mm-hmm. They happen to be Black. And they went to the busing program in St. Louis. They're younger than I am, but they're old enough to have participated in that. And they say that it wasn't exactly fun, but they loved their neighborhood that they lived in. They actually lived in a nice kind of middle class neighborhood, but it was in the city. And their parents put them in the program because they said, this is going to give you the education you need to get into college. And it did. And so they really credit it with them going to the good schools that they ended up going to. And so I think there's stories like those where we kind of have to say, we need to make sure that these kinds of programs, which are private, not government run, are the way that we pluck people out of poverty instead of relying and waiting on the big federal mama and daddy to come in and give everybody a check or this or that, because that's clearly not working.
Right. I mean, you brought up a lot of really good points. I'd love to respond to all of them, but I know you said we have limited time here. But
if you have time, you can hold on to the next segment. Do you have time to hold on to answer
happy
some
to
of
do
them?
It if you'd like. Oh. I could talk about this all day.
Okay. Well, then you will hold on. We don't do this often, but you will hold on. We'll put you on hold. We'll be back with you right after like 3 minutes of messages. And for everybody else who's listening in the audience, this is such a privilege for us to have an expert on to talk about this. So I'm so excited. Hang on. We'll be right back with more Stacey on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk right after this.
Can solid teamwork building principles apply to all of life? Here's Tony Dungy, author of The Soul of a Team, with today's uncommon moment.
I've spent decades considering what it takes for a team to rise to the top. I've learned that talent alone isn't enough. Through experience, both successes and failures, I've learned what generally separates high-achieving teams from those that fail to produce. I've said this before, any business, nonprofit, church, or other type of organization can benefit by applying these four simple yet highly effective principles I've been sharing. They are based on the letters in the acronym SOUL. Those principles are selflessness, ownership, unity, and larger purpose. Find your soul, and you'll create something bigger and longer lasting than you've ever imagined.
Tony Dungy, best-selling author of The Soul of a Team, from Tyndale House. More at CoachDungy.com.
There are many ways you can listen to the shows of Urban Family Talk. One of those ways is through our very own app. Whether you have an iPhone or an Android, just go to the App Store and search for Urban Family Talk. You'll have immediate access to 24-hour programming as well as the podcast for each show. You'll be able to tune in
no matter where you are.
Speaking of tuning in, we have our own channel on another radio app called TuneIn. Cool, right? Urban Family Talk is everywhere. Just download the app and take us wherever you go.
God puts his promises in our reach, not necessarily in our hands.
Dr. Tony Evans says God knows it's good for us to participate in our own victory.
When you know where something's going to wind up, it changes your confidence level.
Discovering and using the keys to spiritual victory. This week on The Alternative with Dr. Tony Evans.
I'm Evan Brown. A number of county sheriffs in Washington state are refusing to enforce a law aimed at restricting gun ownership, part of Ballot Initiative 1639. Sheriff Bob Songer of Klickitat County says it puts people in danger.
And I can tell you, 48 years as a law enforcement officer, this law, 1639, will not do one iota of making our county citizens safer. Bad guys are going to have guns regardless.
The law raises the age to 21 for people to buy semi-auto rifles, with no exception for police and military between ages of 18 and 20. And today's the day in South Dakota. Governor Kristi Noem will sign the state's new law doing away with requiring permits for concealed carry. The state allows open carry with no permits. South Dakota will still issue permits to those wanting them for reciprocity purposes. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
This is Stacy on the Right with Stacy Washington on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the program. It's my pleasure to have with us for a second segment Tommy Schultz, National Communications Director for the American Federation of Children. He's a school choice advocate and is passionate about rescuing kids from these failed educational institutions and giving them the opportunity to access the American dream through having a good education. I also think it builds families when kids are successful in school. It improves the family life, the home life. It just has such an amazing reach in your family, and it promotes strong communities because wherever your kid's going to school, you're plugged in there, and then you are much more likely to be plugged into your community where you live because you're not dealing with the kinds of things like bullying and the self-abuse that kids sometimes do when they're in failed school environments, and also just the negative ramifications of having a kid who isn't learning. So there really are no downsides to this. And so, Tommy, can you talk to us a little bit about what you'd like to see next in the way of legislation, whether it's the local level for states or at the federal level? I would love to see the federal Department of Education abolished, but what do I know?
Well, I think here, when we're talking about what should come next, at least in policy, I think we're working in about a dozen to 18 states every year trying to get great new laws passed that are strong and high quality. And I think the one that you're going to start to see more of is called an education savings account. So unlike kind of like a 529 account, which is like a tax advantage savings account, this is actually the government is essentially giving back your education dollars to you to say, spend it how you see fit. And there's restrictions on that, of course, but it says, look, let's say your average, I'm not sure what the Missouri numbers are, but the average per pupil spending across the country is about $12,000 per student, right? And in some states, that gets up to, you know, 23 or 24,000 in New York, or 20-something thousand in D.C. Mm-hmm. But when the state can say, look, here is, $7,000 that goes back into a restricted debit account that says you can spend that money on private school tuition, you could spend that on tutoring, you could spend that on special needs therapies. This is the type of customization for each individual kid that is, frankly, going to be best going forward. So education savings accounts, they were initially created in Arizona in 2011. More and more states are looking at this, and I think it's a really exciting new way to kind of introduce school choice and to customize things because, again, parents like the notion of getting their education dollars back. I think you brought up how you were looking in, or you're at a private school and they're asking you to raise money separately. Could you imagine if you were actually able to get some of your tax dollars back to be directed to how you see fit with your child for what is their individual learning needs? I mean, that's amazing. So
I imagine it all the time, Tommy. Every time we get our tax bill, I imagine it. I look at the taxes that we pay, the property tax, and then I imagine that that money is going to the school where my kids go to school. And they happen to go to a school that doesn't need renovating or anything like that. It's a newer facility. It's really well-funded. But when they were at another school that was a private school, that school actually needed a lot of additional fundraising. And we did. I tapped all of my little resources. Any friend who liked to donate to different causes, anyone who I thought would give, I would talk to them about what the school was doing and how wonderful it was. But it becomes an exhausting, like, second job when you're at a private school that's struggling to get students in. It has rooms available, you know, seats available, but can't get students in. And for whatever reason, the issue of having the tax dollars go there, I meet people all the time. I've people that live near me who've told me, why would you want to take your tax dollars out of the public school that supports your property value? And I happen to be of the mindset that our current, where we live now, the school district doesn't support our property values because they're always in the news for like dealings with Planned Parenthood and LGBT issues and things like that, which is, those are negatives to me. But you make a great point where that money to follow the child, a lot of parents would choose different options for their kids.
Totally. And we've seen in so many of these states, whether it's Louisiana, Florida, et cetera, we talked about some struggling private schools in certain states. We've seen that these schools flourish, like Christian schools, Jewish schools, non-religious schools are all flourishing in some of these choice states that have these robust scholarship programs. And I've been to some of these schools where an amazing new school, Good Shepherd in Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans, I mean, 100% of the kids they're serving are on one of these public scholarships, whether it's the voucher program or the tax credit program. And these kids are doing great, and yet they're coming from a pretty hard-hit and impoverished area. And this, an education like this is breaking the cycle of poverty in their family, which you brought up is that helps the community. That helps raise the bar for everybody. That's going to improve home values. When you have a strong, robust system of choice in education, the outcomes are going to get better. And we've seen this in Florida. We've seen this in Wisconsin. Those are some of the oldest, private school choice and charter school states in the country. And we just wish every state was like this because millions of kids are falling through the cracks every single year in some of these pretty terrible schools that have been pretty terrible for decades and mismanaged for decades.
Then there's also, this is what really annoys me. There'll be something fantastic. And you mentioned this, Andrew Gillum was going to eliminate the school choice program if he was mm-hmm. elected, which I thank God he was so honest about it because then parents were able to respond. Because if you want that, then of course vote for him. But right. If you're like, wait, what has it ever done to you? Like, what has this program done to you that you would end it when we're all participating? But we saw that happen with President Obama. He ended the school choice program for kids in D.C. who they were actually escaping not just bad schools, but schools where literally you have like 20% of the kids who can read and do math. Everybody else per pupil expenditure over $30,000 a year. And everybody else, 80%, can't read or do math. They're literally illiterate, but they're going to school every day. And the taxpayers are paying all that money.
Right. No, I mean, it was shameful. I mean, we were involved in a lot of that fight in D.C. When President Obama's team at the Department of Education was trying to do everything they could to essentially restrict or shut down the voucher program here. And that program is incredible. I mean, there's been thousands of kids, about 10,000, it's the 15th anniversary of that voucher program, 10,000 kids have gone through this. And The average graduation rate is upwards of 90+% Some, you know, very often it's 98-99% graduation rate. Similar amounts going to college, whereas in the D.C. public schools, and they've done studies on this, that the graduation rates would be 30% lower. And frankly, they're actually, all those graduation rates for the public schools are getting better because of the charter programs and because of the voucher program in D.C. So it just goes to show that when folks are trying to shut this down, you know, politicians especially, it's pretty hypocritical in a lot of cases, because guess what? President Obama didn't send his kids to D.C. public schools. He sent them to a private school. Those are about $40,000 a year. And he admitted because the D.C. public schools just weren't up to snuff. And frankly, we just think that, you know, President Obama shouldn't be the only person in public housing that has access to a private school. We think all families should have access to the school of their choice, no matter the style or the location, frankly. There's a lot of new learning opportunities that are coming literally online. You know, a lot of virtual programs that are showing really good promise, and for, you know, families that have irregular work or travel schedules or things like that. Charter schools are serving about 3 million kids today. There's millions of kids in private schools and about a 500,000 that are using like a voucher program or a tax credit program or an education savings account. And we just think that should be available to all the 56 million kids that are currently of schooling age.
56 million. So that is a number that is so important for us to like pipe out here on the show today. 56 million American kids. And you just ran down statistics for the different numbers. And I can tell you, it's 56 million is a huge number in my mind. You know, if you think about different populations of states or different numbers, how do you get to 56 million? You got to cobble together quite a few states to get 56 million, unless you just go easy and say New York, Texas, and, you know, some of California. But it's something else that's going on here. You're talking about the statistics and the numbers around kids who are finding their way out of this failed system. And when I say failed system, I know there are plenty of parents who are in public schools and they love them and they're doing well, they're thriving. But it's not about those kids. It's, you know, you preserve those by, I know that in Anchorage, it's Anchorage, Kentucky. They've done some school choice there where they eliminated school districts in Louisville, Kentucky. Anchorage is a little town outside of Louisville in the suburbs. And so what they did was they basically privatized their school district for K through 8 education. They have a single building there, and in order to go there, you have to live and pay taxes in the Anchorage school district, you know, in the lines. And they did that because they felt they had something that worked that they didn't want to let go of, but most of the people in Louisville were voting for the other option. It's stories like that that tell me, Tommy, that there's a solution in every situation where you have a thriving public school. They don't want to, you know, be a part of a school choice initiative. They can separate themselves off, but surrounding areas can participate. I'm encouraging people to listen to this interview and to think of it as, it's not that everyone has to do school choice the way it's being done in Florida or Washington, D.C. or Kentucky. It's that there's an option out there that will work, and we should be more open to kind of negotiating and getting there so that kids can get an education.
Absolutely. I mean, state after state where we've seen robust school choice, you know, from start to finish where there wasn't any school choice to where, you know, upwards of states like Florida, where I think 46% of all kids pre-K through 12 do not attend their zone public school. And I think Miami, which I believe is the third largest school district, Florida, third largest across the country, that is, you know, 70+% of kids do not go to their zone public school. What we're finding is that, yes, there is an option for every kid. Some schools may be a really bad fit for one kid, and it may be in the eyes of, you know, the, you know, certain statistics is a failing school, but they might be sending 3 or 4 kids to, you know, the Harvards or the Stanfords of the world every year. So it's really about customization. It's about having the freedom to choose and figure out what is best for your kid. And there's plenty of private schools, you know, all around the country. There's plenty of charter schools. There should be more all around the country that could be fitting each kid's needs. And for a politician especially, or the union, to say that, no, those options should not be available, just keep the money flowing to our system, it just doesn't make sense. And especially when you probably see this, Stacey, a radical notion gets proposed by certain candidates where they say, you know what, and these are candidates that are usually in support of choice, they'll say, look, I think that 60% of all funding should go to the classroom. And for those who probably aren't in the education realm, you start to go, wait, 60% isn't going to the classroom? Where is the money going? And you start to unravel what's going on here and how the unions and the public school bureaucracy is really mm-hmm. sucking up so much of the money in the education realm. And it's going to unproductive things like paper pushers and administrative offices that just mm-hmm. probably aren't necessary.
A superintendent of instruction.
Charter schools where they're
superintendent of curriculum.
The average funding or the private schools that are operating at $6,000 tuition mm-hmm. for kids. It's just something is fundamentally wrong, and we think choice is going to open things up and improve it.
Tommy, that's a can of worms that I believe needs to be opened up, but people need to be prepared that they're big worms. And if you're anything like me, where you're scared of worms, then you need to have your goggles and your elbow gloves on and, be prepared to be grossed out. But what you've just called out is something that most parents aren't even aware of. There's a superintendent of everything. There's probably a superintendent of bathroom, maintenance. There's in public schools, they have someone who's a professional educator, someone who has a PhD in education and administration, who's administering something like curriculum, which some of these things, obviously, you're going to need someone in charge of it to work on it. But it used to be that the superintendent and committees of teachers would handle these jobs. Now, the teachers, because of unions, are like, I'm not working extra hours on curriculum. And so they hire a superintendent of instruction to, as you say, push those papers. I find it disgusting. And when you push back against it, people say, well, you're just trying to, destroy the education here. No, the money should be going towards the instructional time during the day, which coincidentally, most of your kids out there in public school are getting 4 hours of instructional time a day. They may be in the building for 9 hours, but they're getting 4 hours. That is the maximum that they're getting. It might be the minimum as well. You have to read the laws in your state. And parents just have to you put your ear to the ground and you'll be surprised at what you hear. Tommy Schultz, National Communications Director for American Federation of Children. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your enthusiasm and the work that you're doing. I wish you Godspeed with it. Let's do more in 2019 to get kids out of these failing schools.
I agree. Thank you so much, Stacey. And happy to be on next time when something like this comes up.
Absolutely.
Really
let's talk again soon. I'd love to have updates on what successes you're having. Thank you, Tommy. All right. So that just was such a great interview. And I was so glad that he could hold over with us to kind of get into the next segment. I know we normally take calls then, and we will still do that. Right now, I want to point you to, we have just a couple of quick things before we get off. I want to make sure that you're aware, especially if you missed the show yesterday, we are really excited about next week. You can already get it on demand now. So I need to correct that. I said you could get it on video on demand from Amazon next week, but you can actually get Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer, the movie that's changing hearts and minds about abortion. You can get that movie on video on demand from Amazon right now. But if you want to do as I plan to do, which is to purchase a DVD for yourself and have a viewing party at your house or at your church or at some place, any place, you can purchase the DVD starting Tuesday, February 4th from Amazon, Best Buy, or Walmart. Not available at the AFA store, but that's okay. We love being able to access this content, and so we're not concerned about where you get it. We just want you to know you can get it. Never before has it been that the news story kind of intersects so perfectly with the release date of a DVD. I don't think these people that are trying to get infanticide legalized, they don't know how appropriate it is that they're actually bringing these bills forward right now with Gosnell coming out. You have to gird your loins, pray, and then watch the film. And I promise you, you will be changed by it for the good, because it's going to educate you. All right. If you're leaving us now, God bless you from the heartland. Thanks for making your home at American Family Radio. And we'll be back with more after One News Now, news and information for those who are sticking around.